Were you a sad bearded white guy when you started in 99? What's the difference between what you do now?
I didn't have a beard.
Well, but how in terms of what we saw last night, how much of that was something you started with?
In really none of it.
I don't mean in terms of the material. I mean in terms of the persona.
No, approach. Still really none of it. I started, it was, Hedberg was the guy, Mitch Hedberg was the guy that made me think I could do, because I was watching comedy when I was, you know, 7 and 8 years old, and I didn't know what it was, because people were talking about their wives, and like, I don't even, what mom and dad are, that's the relationship, but the idea that somebody could stand on a stage and all these people are laughing, like, he's just talking, like, you know what I'm saying? And I always admired stand-up and watched it when it was just, anytime it was on TV, I devoured it. I stayed up late. I got in trouble in kindergarten because the teacher's like, what's your favorite show? I'm like, oh, Johnny Carson. And they call, like, why is your son up this late? Why? Yeah. He said Johnny Carson. My mom's like, that's when he stays up. He likes the show.
Yeah. This is supportive dad.
So, yeah, and I can't even remember. Supportive dad. Oh. And I can't even remember specific acts. I just remember him with the genie hat on and just... like, what are these guys just talking? And then everybody's laughing. Like, oh, that's what I do with my friends. We just talk and we laugh. Like, and somehow this is on television. It, you know, it didn't... it just seemed amazing that it was even a creation. So I eventually tried to get into music and try and music. No, I have no ability in anything else. Mm-hmm. I don't have... for a while, I was, you know, I could sort of draw. And I had gotten a couple bands. I played guitar in a couple bands. They were punk bands. It wasn't good. So it was seeing bands. Because, you know, I got a guitar when I was in maybe sixth grade. And you see, you know, you have MTV. And at that age, sixth grade, I was still like hair metal bands. I was still like, oh, I'm going to be like Slash. I'll get this guitar. I'll give it like 6 months. And I'll play like Slash from Guns N' Roses. And just plinking around on it, I'm easily frustrated. I'm like, oh, I'm never going to play this thing.
I did something similar with skateboarding.
Yeah. I did them all. Skateboarding, BMX, guitar, everything. I was like, oh, I'm going to be like these guys. And never pulled off any of it. But then I saw some punk bands in high school. And watching them, like, I can play this. And they still have a band. And they got people together. Mm-hmm. And they get, like, all these people are out. And they're not on MTV. And they're not on the radio. But all these people came to see them. And so I think... it wasn't an idea of being famous, but it was an idea of like, oh, you can create something that other people like, but will also be fulfilling. Okay. So seeing the band, like, oh, this is the type of music I want to listen to, and it's not even on the radio. I got to go other places for this stuff. And at that point, so that was the attitude I had towards stuff. I got really into punk music.
Was it the alternativeness of that that was appealing somehow? Because it's interesting, you're talking about trying to attract an audience, but not necessarily in a mainstream kind of way. And you're not someone who I'd think of as a mainstream kind of an act. I mean, we can talk about that.
Yeah, I was just so terrified. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs, and there was nothing unique about my existence. Meaning it wasn't bad. It was two great parents, you know, family unit that had their ups and downs. But that's every family has that. I think any family that just bottles it and doesn't express themselves, that's what. So, and it was fine. I grew up in the suburbs, and for the most part, I had a great job. So I had nothing. You know, like, I was so afraid of just being absolutely normal through life. And the fact that there was no ability that was going to lift me out of that, like, oh, I'm probably secretly a great guitar player. I'm probably going to be great at BMX, but no, it's not. So I had nothing that was going to take me out of that normalcy. Like, I didn't know what to do. Like, I got to find something. And so seeing Mitch Hedberg on TV around the same time I was playing in bands, I was still watching stand-up comedy, but at that point it was real cheesy and nobody knew what they were seeing. And I didn't have, like, just like music, I had to find myself. I didn't have anybody to expose me to, you know, like Mr. Show and things like that. I watched Kids in the Hall and I knew that. I was like, this is weird and not everybody gets it. But sometimes I don't even get it. But yeah. It's so weird.
That is exactly the experience of watching Kids in the
Hall. Like, I don't know what that sketch was about at all. Then I'm laughing my ass off at it. But then Mitch Hedberg, I'm like, oh, you don't look like these. You're not talking about relationships, or just this weirdo that looks like he stumbled in there and shouldn't even be allowed on the show. And the jokes, I'm like, oh, these are little weird little word puzzles, and you seem spaced out, like you're nervous about. Oh, if he can do that, and it was the same thing I saw with bands. Going, wait a minute, I can do the way that I can play those chords, okay. And I have friends that are just, you know, marginally as good at their instruments. And oh, and we got it together and played a band. Like, if he can do comedy, that gave me hope that I don't have to have all these experiences of having children or having a family or. This guy's just a weirdo.
You can just get up there and sort of mash up the world as you see it.
Yeah, whatever's just playing with words and everything. And so that's got me into it. I went to, but still doing stand-up, it still didn't even seem like an artistic venture. So I went to college, and eventually after failing out of a couple colleges, I went to a liberal arts school for creative writing, thinking, I'll be a writer. That was my last, I'll be a writer. That's what it was. This is all leading up to me finding out I'm probably going to be a writer. But I hated it. I never sat down. I never felt a need to write. And then whenever I did write stories for class, I'd come in, and there's nothing worse than like 19-year-old kids who think they're writers. They're more, oh, God, the most melodramatic, over-serious, and every... and I'm trying to do funny stories, and they just didn't think I was taking the class seriously. Like, no, it could be funny and still be a story. Just because it makes you smile instead of some crushing heartbreak. They're like, all right, yes, this is the story. You know, how many coming out stories do we have versus heroin problem stories? I'm like, this is a drag. I'm going to write about fun things with the same skills, and nobody got it. So
is that why I just want to stay for a minute with this idea of you hated being a writer. Is that just because you... the surroundings you've described, you hated the other stuff going on? Or was it that you also said something about you didn't like sitting down and doing it?
It sounded cool. It's like, what a cool thing to call yourself. I'm a writer. What a neat thing to be. And I was reading, I didn't even read passionately. Like, I had no makings of being a writer other than I had to get, I'd gone past the halfway mark of university where it's like, I may as well just finish. I've got to get a degree in something. It'll give me $3 more an hour at whatever shit job I get afterwards. So, you know what? I'll call myself a writer. In the liberal arts school that I went to at the time, so I was taking writing classes. I took a couple improv classes because I gave them, like, let's see if this performing, because it all seemed very cheesy, especially from like a punk rock and raw, say whatever, you know, I'm gonna give me a suggestion, and it seemed real cheesy. And being a writer just sounded like it had so much integrity to it. Like, oh, I'm a writer, and it sound gristled and Chicago and it's brick and it's winter, and I'm a writer and I drink whiskey. But I wasn't. I was a goofball dipshit wanting to have fun with my friends. And so, the school eventually said, you have enough credits, you have to graduate. And that was the worst thing I could hear, because I was like, oh, I don't want to graduate. I have to get a job then. So I just I took some improv. I started stand-up. And that's where I found the outlet for all this writing. Like, oh, I can say it on this stage.
Okay.
And right away find out if it's funny or not.
So you approached it as a writer, because I think often with comics you can go, oh, this guy's a performer first and foremost, or a writer first and foremost. You kind of approached it as a failed or failing writer?
Yeah, failing everything. Not even tried, so I can't even say I failed at writing.
Yeah,
so
okay.
I didn't even try.
I mean, I know a lot of people will be listening to this, as I am, going, this is great, I can be as good as Kyle, I suck at skateboarding and guitar, I don't enjoy sitting down to write, this is great!
Sink upwards.
Yeah.
There's like this tattoo of an upside down anchor that says stay afloat on it, and I got it with a friend, he's like, yeah, it's like sink upwards. I'm like, it should have said sink upwards. I haven't failed at getting a cool tattoo. Like, as soon as we got him, I'm like, yeah, sink upwards, like, it should have said that. That would have been better if it said that. Can't do anything right, which lent itself great to stand-up.
Yeah.
Again, it's this catch-all. Oh, I can talk about all my failures, and if I do it, if I can twist it in a way that people laugh at them, then you're successful. It's the only, like, it's the one of the few things that you could turn into a success by failing and everything else. Just describe your failures in a funny way. And that was, I think, growing up with the group of friends that I had, knew that, like, if you were going to bitch about your life, nobody had great lives and nobody had truly tragic lives. It was just a very mundane, milquetoast existence of the suburbs. And so everybody knew that if you're going to bitch about your job or your family or anything, you better make it entertaining for everybody else, because that's what was fun about hanging out. Like, I'll get Bob riled up. He's going to bitch about stuff. It's the most fun thing to hear is Bob getting angry. Everybody knew they had to be entertaining. Otherwise, nobody's going to... You're just complaining? Get the fuck out of here. If you're going to complain, make it entertaining for us, and we'll listen to it. All my friends are funnier than I am. I mean, that was probably... I mean, as much as I'm a writer and all, I saw comedy, it was my friends. Like, if I'm going to complain about my life, you want to make your buddies laugh at it. We didn't make fun of... We made fun of each other, but made fun of ourselves just as much. And so that's... I never started doing that on stage until years later, because I was watching Hedberg and thinking, oh, as a writer, I could play with these words.
Something that I think sets you apart from a lot of other acts I've seen who have a similar kind of drive and kind of bite on stage. You're very kind of punchy as a comic, do you know what I mean? There's lots of dense jokes, a very high punchline count, and also you're, I mean... Like, to you, it might be a sort of a sad white, sad bearded white man, but you also kind of... There's a thing I talk about, an arbitrary distinction I've made on the podcast before about kind of road warrior comics. You know what I mean? The guys who's like, well, let me tell you a thing or two, here's a drinking story.
Yeah.
What sets you apart from those is, one, how articulate you are, and two, your empathy. And I think that's a really... exciting combination to watch, is someone who's got like the ability to smash a room up and down, but also has empathy, and the fact that you're talking about not hating cops and understanding, you have an ability to see it from the point of view of the characters in your stories.
Yeah, well, that's just how I'm going through life. That was I was cynical for so long. I was the guy going through, this is stupid, look at that, thing's dumb, that guy's an idiot. I was like, why is this... That's still in me. That's still a part of my life. But, like, how's this benefiting my existence to be that way? Oh, good. Look how superior I am. I'm going to sit here, you know, unshowered, drinking my life away with roommates, but I'm still going to act like I'm better than others. Like, it's not... It was just a shit way to live. And I think what it was is I was starting to criticize friends for having the same characteristics I had. It was like... And I still talk out my ass way too often, make sweeping generalizations about things I have no place talking about, and that's what you do. I mean, you're a bar bullshitter. That's what you do at the bar at midnight. Is you can get into great conversation, but I'm so scared that becoming a well-rounded person is going to kill comedy.
You becoming a well-rounded person, or the people becoming...
Well, yeah, because you're most entertained by people that have a quick, like, ah, look at this dumb guy over here. And I say funny things. You don't hate that other guy, no more than the person saying it hates that person. But it's that quick snap to judgment for entertaining the other people around you, not to be mean to somebody else. And now I'm getting real pragmatic, where I'm like, look at this guy doing a thing. Well, why is he doing it? Maybe he's got a... That whole idea of going through life going... somebody's having a worse day. That person that just bumped into you, maybe they're having a worse day than you. And it was... It's a way to rationalize, but it's also like, it's still arrogance. Oh, I'm having a better day than that person. It's still in its own way.
Everything's a bit of a rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah. And I'm caught in it right now. But seeing both sides of things... It's weird to write comedy that way. You get more material, because instead of just hating one thing, why do you hate it? What about it? Do you like anything about it? Try and write that. I try and justify my hatred. If I can't justify it, I just found a solution. I just psychologically helped myself by seeing both sides of a story into writing. Like last night, I don't know. It's a strange way to go with comedy's therapy for people, but it's incredibly effective way to... I don't know if it's therapy, but it's philosophy. It's made me, strictly to, just for mining material, it's made me think about the world, forced myself to think in different ways, and all that's done is open up other parts of my brain, make me see, you know, make me see both sides of a situation. But it was from writing exercises, because I was running out of material, and I wasn't getting into situations like, man, the craziest thing happened last night. It was two people fucking in an alley, and Tony and I were watching them. Like, that doesn't happen in my life anymore. So I have to wonder why a guy that asked for chocolate whipped cream on his coffee in front of me apologized to me. And that's not, but I have to, like, I was angry with him. Because I'm like, no, if you're going to do it, own it. You should look at me and be like, fuck right, I got chocolate whipped cream on. Don't justify for your choices. You need to be a strong. I'm like, why am I angry at this dude? Oh, it's because I was already angry. I already judged him, and then he could feel me judge him. Like, I go down this whole thought process over to my new things.
You mentioned a writing exercise there. Is that a specific exercise that you did to... What exercise do you mean? Do you use a lot of writing exercises? I do want to talk a bit about the writing more specifically.
I mean, I wouldn't even say it's... I didn't read it. It was for my own way to just come up with more material.
And what is that way?
Well, and it was because I watched so many comics that would criticize something, and I was just getting sick of it. Because if you're going to criticize something... Again, what is it about you? Ask yourself why you're criticizing or angry with it. Again... Or if you're criticizing something, do you have a solution? Otherwise, you're just pissing into the wind. You're just another person bitching on a street corner about stuff. And so I was taking what I disliked or had, you know, took objected to in comedy at that point. It's like, oh, can I do something different? Whereas when I complain about something, but then go, I'm no better than what I'm complaining about. And it forced me. Oh yeah, why am I? But it became this, you know, self-help method just to come up with more material. Think about it. You have a debate class, and they just give you, it's arbitrary which side you're on.
Yeah, okay.
Abortion, whether you're for it or against it, you're assigned the side. And it forces you, it's critical thinking. It forces you to think in terms of argument, and not about your beliefs, but you know. And through that process, you might learn about yourself, like, oh, I'm arguing. Now I am seeing the other side of this argument. And you can, it takes the passion out of it, but you're not, it doesn't take, this is the part where I'm not articulate anymore. It doesn't take the passion out of anything, but you're like, oh yeah, I see both sides now. I'm not so heated about one because I can see the other. The cop thing, I'm not so like, fuck cop. I had plenty of jokes about it. We're like, fuck cops. I've had my troubles with them. But I kept forgetting all the times that a cop was like, oh, sorry, buddy. I'm stopping you. I'm letting you go. And even if you were doing something wrong, they let you go because they realize you weren't a danger or a threat to anything. And you forget about all those times. And now I'm remembering those times and going, there's shitty ones and there's good ones, just like there is in every group of people out there.
So is it almost like the writing process for you, the kind of the self-reflection and the arguments and the theses and all of that, it's almost like an accelerated growing up process. Do you know what I mean? You've accelerated in how you're kind of seeing other people's point of view because you've put that work into writing about it.
It's changed me as a person lately. Whereas I still have friends that they just sit at home and just watch TV and just, I can't believe this shit makes it on TV and watch sitcoms. And it's like, well, you live in LA, write a show then, do something. People just sit back and they bitch. Sit back, get stoned, bitch, wake up, go to work, and do it again. It's like, that's so depressing to me. And they get locked into that, just sitting, feeling superior. How are you feeling superior? You're still just spending your free time pissing it away. Seeing both sides, if that's what makes you truly happy, is to come home like I did my job and make just enough to get by.
Yeah, you're entitled to bitch about the world without doing anything. Yeah, maybe.
If you don't want to change your life, I'm not telling you you need to. Again, that's seeing that like, oh, why am I judging them? What if they're truly happy? It's not my place to tell you you're doing something wrong.
Sure.
You know, maybe you're not going to get fulfillment from contributing to society. You did your day job, whatever it is, you made sense of it. And therefore, good. I wonder what, but now I'm not going to argue with them. Squashes.
I suppose that the end point of this is a kind of a Zen singularity, whereby you see the world constantly from everyone's point of view, and then you just vanish.
I'm getting so close. Like, I do. I just want, because things that are angering me and I don't have solutions, like I want to just delete Facebook and Twitter, and I do kind of want to disappear after a while. I kind of want to, I'm just going to go and pull some, Emerson thing and just go into the woods for a year and then come back with a new special, which is all just meditations on nature, and see if I can still make it funny, but still just come back in a philosophical sense. Because it's like somebody, you want to see comedians grow from album to album. Yeah. You want to see them change. Just like bands. I didn't want to see, I still go try and see punk shows, but a big part of that, it was like progress, was the idea of forward thinking and more of these bad, like Fugazi, and go forward thinking, and there's still people out there with just blue Liberty spikes, and it's like you're just in a costume.
That's a really good point.
It's a Halloween costume.
The things you loved about that band 15 years ago were the fact that they were never the sort of people who would end up doing the same thing for 15 years like you have. Because of your love of the band.
And it's just now it's just a Halloween costume. Like I was at a festival like a month ago, and it was literally like the band was so old, and it was always Liberty style. Like next thing you know, they're gonna start talking about Thatcher, and it was literally like, "This one's for Margaret Thatcher." Yeah. I'm like, she's dead. That's like really these are the topics in the United States. Like Ronald Reagan didn't do it. He fucking died. But why are you still singing about this? Move forward. The comedians, but then again, the great one. I mean, I don't want to see Dave Attell change. I want to see Dave Attell do what he does because he makes me laugh every time. And there are bands like AC/DC who are like, no, don't experiment.
Yeah.
You're doing exactly what you're supposed to do, and we love you for it.
Yeah.
I'm not happy with that, with myself. I keep telling drunk stories, but eventually I can't. Because it just sounds sad. The older you get, if you're in your 20s, tell blackout stories. Tell all your drug stories. Or when you're older, you can go back and recount those stories with maybe a little bit of wisdom added to it. But you don't just want to see a 50-year-old dude go, man, I got so fucked up last week. And I'm like, oh, that's a sad thing.
You mentioned Twitter before, and I know that I think you've got something like 130,000 followers on Twitter. I don't know where you are in... I don't know where you see yourself in terms of your career, whether it's like, from the point of view of someone in the UK, it's like, who's this Carl Kinane guy? Oh, wow, let's go and see him. Oh, he's going off. Oh, he's got another special coming out. There's two albums I can buy. It feels like you're on an upward trajectory at the moment. Do you think that's...
Yeah, I feel... It is. I always feel like it... I always feel like it could end next week.
Yeah.
Again, it's the quality control thing. It keeps me from ever complaining or not taking it seriously or getting lazy. Nobody should... this isn't something you should be able to do for a living. It's like being a comedian is not necessary to the universe. Not to say that all, forms, art forms and this and that, they're necessary to people's habits. But it just doesn't seem right that, this is how I make a living. So if it goes away next week, I would just have to say thank you for the opportunity. So the upswing hopefully continues, but I don't count on it. But that's the quality control process of still do. I took the long way to get here, but it worked. Don't change the formula.
Do you feel trapped was where I was going with that. Do you feel like, in terms of you say you'd like to leave Twitter, presumably there's a business part of your brain going, I can't leave Twitter. I can sell units. I can, I can further my career because I've got the ear of 100,000 people.
I was up till 4:30 last night, just put a bunch of stupid shit on there, and I just I just don't really care about it anymore. I'm like, oh, this is crafted joke. I misspell stuff. I forget where I'm whatever. Send, and it'll be I'll go for a bunch of days without doing anything, and I'll throw a few jokes on there. Just try and get jokes, a few jokes, and then information. I know, I understand it's necessary. But as far as feeling trapped, it was more of this Moore's Law to technophobia. Like, I'm getting a little bit sick of it. And it's inevitable, and I'm so scared of sounding like an old man in the face of it. But everybody, I still want to go to concerts. I'm not so old, like, loud music, but put your goddamn phone down. How are you enjoying the experience? You're watching it through. Nobody's going to want to see your shaky iPhone footage of the show. There's probably somebody there taping it already professionally. And all you're doing, there's a while there, I was just holding my phone directly up against the person's phone in front of me if they're taping it. And then if they looked at me, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, am I obstructing your view? But that's just going to get my ass kicked. And I'm not a fighter, so like I don't have the physicality to back up being a smart ass most of the time. But just this, the reliance, it's necessary, it's inevitable, but I don't, I kind of want to know that I don't need it.
So is there, when you imagine the rest of your career, or if you ever think about, what might happen 10, 20 years from now, is there anything about the comedy industry that you feel compels you or traps you? Or, I mean, how are you coping with all the travel? How do you cope with that? Is that okay? Because you're doing the sort of long game, you've got your plans, or?
That was another one of the fantasies. I've been getting into some tiffs with airport people lately. So I've been looking at transit vans. Can I just convert one of those?
Yeah.
And just the joke of, the TSA in the States, I'm just constantly insisting on pat downs, and the more and more they're like, well, this machine. I'm like, don't give me that machine. You're going to touch me. Mm-hmm. We're going to have human contact because of this bullshit. And it's like, I don't even want to joke. All the hack jokes about it have been done already, but I still, I don't want to sound so conspiracy theorist, but it's one of those things where you saw everybody hated it. And like, if everybody at the airport just said, I'm not going through that thing, they put you through, even if there's a line, they put you through the metal detector anyway. Mm-hmm. Or if everybody just said, yes, we want pat downs instead of this machine. But you get that more and more people are just giving up their liberties slowly. Can't take them away all at once, but just give them up slowly. And so it's not that it's getting a bit frustrating. It's wearing me down. Again, the other part is like you're flying somewhere to tell jokes for a living. Shut up.
Yeah.
Deal with it. But then it's not like a one-time inconvenience. It's every week of I get from this destination. I got to stop for having a bowling pin in my bag, which I went from one airport to another with the bowling pin. And then the second airport, like, you can't take this on. I'm like, well, I just did. And why not? It's like, well, it's a club. Could be. And I just started pointing out everything else. I'm like, what about skateboards? What about guitars? What about any other musical
instrument? What about my fist?
What about this metal water bottle that I'm going to fill up, which I'll have way to it? And he's like, it's like, I don't make the rules. I'm like, you tell me why you don't understand the rules you're enforcing right now. And that's when they bring up the idea of airport police, and I just want to get home more than I want to fight the man. And so I just, like, fucking fine. I go and check the bag, a lot of security. It's just bullshitty stuff. And plus, I've driven across the States a few times, and that was, like, awe-inspiring and very zen-like to drive across.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a patriot in many means for everything that's screwed up the States, but geographically, it's amazing that you can go from just about every type of ecosystem within the lower 48 states. It's fascinating to me. You can go from desert to rainforest to tropical jungle to and so that always appeals until you got an 8-hour driving stretch and all you want to do is sleep.
How do you cope with the demands of a comedy club atmosphere when you are talking about stuff that's, I mean, I don't want to say bearing your soul, but when you're talking about important stuff, when you're talking about failure, the reality of looking at yourself and your dreams and wondering how far they've got. I just want to talk technically. Like you said, you look above the audience, you don't really make eye contact with them, but when people get up and go for a drink or go for a piss, how do you kind of mentally go, lose those distractions when you're talking about something that's important to you?
Well, I mean, it depends. If I know they're listening, then I'm fine with that. The comedy club audience, when I started, a lot of people, they couldn't wait to just quit whatever their day job was and go and do shitty shows. You hear the Road Warrior things, and they've all got the, oh, man, and then it was snowing, and we drove through, and that sounded awful to me. You're taking the thing you love doing, and then you're just whoring it out for unappreciative audiences and little to no money, and I'd rather just stay in the
city. Finding nobility in that. That's quite an interesting...
It's not... Again, there's no wrong way. But those people have skills I don't have. Those people can deal with the roughest drunks heckling them and know how to deal with them. And somebody yells at me. I'm like, listen, here, motherfucker. And I just want to fight people. And, the rage gets me instead of wit. But it just didn't... It didn't make sense because I never wanted to make... Making money off of it was never the priority. It was just... It was, I just found the puzzle that can't be completed in my life. And no matter what happens, everybody's like, what's your comedy advice? It's like, do you love it enough to do it for free forever? Because just plan on that. Just plan on that you're going to do it for free forever. And if you're allowed to make money off of it, be grateful. But I never wanted to, again, it's the quality control. I don't want to force myself into some bar where they're like, just rowdy, it's comedy night. We'll go... Then force myself into that fitting, and into that setting, because then you would see these guys that go on the road and they come back and their material would get a little bit softer, get a little bit more general. I got to win them over, And I'm like, I don't want to do that. I'll just stay here and do my fun little art house shit. Not even that it's art, but it's a quality control. If they want me, if somebody's asking me to come do it, then I'll give it a shot. I'm never going to hustle. Hey, can I play your club? Hey, can I play your club? It's like, no, you can ask me, and then I'll do it. And, the few clubs I did where it was, getting in there, and it is the rowdy people. I'm like, I don't want them to like me. I don't like them. Why do I need their approval if I don't even like them? Just people on free tickets, drunk guys just trying to impress their girlfriends. I'm like, you're a dickhead everywhere else in the world. Why do I want you to like me right now? I don't give a fuck about you. So I just kept it to now. There's an audience that comes to the show, or at least maybe they're friends of somebody they haven't seen that they don't know what I'm about. But at least, it's like taking a chance at going to see a band. You don't just walk, I love music, and then you go in and it's a heavy metal band. You're like, you suck. No, you didn't research your night. At least, I like heavy metal music. I don't know who this band is, but let me go see this heavy metal band. And be like, oh, that does fit into my, I do like this. Hopefully that's who's at the show. With that thinking, last night, if people are going up, I tell them, go pee. I don't want you to feel uncomfortable, you're trapped by your own, you can't go piss or get a drink. If that's what makes you enjoy the show more, by all means, you'd be comfortable, go do that. I don't feel so bad about it now. If it's somebody being loud and being a dickhead, then, But now more and more people at least know who I am, or at least what it might be about through descriptions in papers and reviews, and they take a chance on it.